Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Welcome, everyone, to the third edition of the Bright Lights, Green Sights podcast series. This time I have the pleasure to be joined by Lisa Price, the founder of Carol's Daughter. Once again, the Bright Lights, Green Sights series is backed by the Center for Business and Environment at Yale and is set up to really bring entrepreneurs into campus who have a different perspective on sustainable business, on entrepreneurship, who have a unique story that students here on campus can learn from. So Lisa, do you mind taking a couple minutes just to introduce yourself and telling the audience here what Carol's Daughter does?
I am Lisa Price, and I founded a company called Carol's Daughter in 1993. It started in my kitchen, where I produced body care products and hair care products, cooking them on my stove, mixing them in my kitchen with cake mixers and blenders and things like that. And it has grown into a much larger business, about $35 million in sales a year. And we were recently acquired by L'Oreal USA, so I'm now a part of that family.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. One thing during your talk that really resonated with me is you mentioned that there was this moment when you were starting Carol's Daughter, when you were thinking about the name, where you had goosebumps. And I wanted you to just recap that specifically in terms of, for people who are looking to be entrepreneurs, what does it really mean to follow your gut?
Your intuition is extremely important. And I've been in business for 23 years. So there are things that I have learned when I'm in a situation and my gut tells me X, but I do Y because I defer to the other people in the room who maybe have more knowledge than I have. And then it turns out that my gut was actually right. So there are times when you won't choose that gut feeling. But that has to happen because I think that's how you learn how to trust that intuition. And even though you may not be the most technical about the aspects of the business, you are always going to be the most correct about your brand when it comes to its DNA and its marketing. So that gut instinct has to work hand in hand with whatever process or policy is in place at the time.
No, definitely. I agree with that. One of the other things that you mentioned specifically when you were talking about how your product was merchandised, was you talked about how Carol's Daughter was one of the first to do something called cross-channel sales, mm-hmm. or at least one of the, or how cross-channel sales are innovative within your industry. Mm-hmm. So do you mind giving us a little bit of background on where you're currently sold and how you decided to utilize that strategy?
Well, today we sell our Prestige line in Ulta, and we sell it on HSN. And then we have a line that is specifically for mass distribution that's sold in Target, Sally Beauty, and in select Walgreens. Typically, in the beauty industry, one brand will either be sold in prestige, so something that you find in department stores. So for example, if you go to a department store, you can find MAC Cosmetics in a department store, but you would not go to Target and find MAC Cosmetics in Target. They don't usually cross-channel within beauty. That's not the case in fashion. You have fashion lines that are high end, and then you have the lower end version of the fashion line that you can see someplace else. With us, we realized that we needed to play in the mass space because that's where the fish were, for lack of a better term. We needed to fish where the fish were. And at the same time, really didn't want to let go of the business that we had on HSN because it was working. So we bifurcated the line and took a set of products that were already at a somewhat lower price point and repackaged them. We didn't change the products themselves, but just repackaged them and adjusted the pricing accordingly to fit within a Target environment and kept our prestige items where they were. And thankfully, that strategy worked very, very well for us.
I'm guessing there was a lot of debate and a lot of discussion when you made that decision. During that process, you know, do you mind just relating what some of those positions were? What were some of the arguments in the pro and against that decision? And I ask you this question just from the perspective of for entrepreneurs starting businesses. There are a lot of times where, you know, you do reach this critical moment where you have to make a big decision that either, you know, really significantly impacts your brand you know, might change the trajectory of your company. So I'd love to learn more about how you made that decision.
It was definitely not a decision that was widely accepted amongst the board at the time. So it was something that had to be proven to be a viable idea. When I was going through it on a personal level, I did realize the risk. It wasn't that I didn't realize it and chose to ignore it. But I also felt like I knew what would happen if we stayed where we were, because there were many things that we had tried to make the sales process that we had at the time work, and those things were not working, and there really wasn't much else to do. It wasn't as if, oh, if we had this money, we could do this, or oh, if we had this technology, we could do that. We had done a lot to make that work, and it just wasn't working. So it was, do we just stay where we are and pray that everything works out, or do we do something and be proactive and affect change? So while it was frightening and difficult, it was something that had to be done. And, you know, we were able to convince the board to go along with it, even though there were many concerns. And thankfully, it was the right thing to do. It worked out very, very well. The finances of the company drastically changed in a 9-month period in ways that we never thought that it would. So I'm grateful for, in that instance, listening to that gut. You know, at that time, I could trust the gut because it had been 20 some odd years of knowing when to listen to it. And I knew this was the right time to listen to it.
And you mentioned your board there a couple of times. How did you choose your board, or, and how did you choose some of your initial investors? What kind of group did you surround yourself with to get yourself started?
Initially, the first investor that I had, first business partner that I had, was a person who came to me through one of my customer/friends. So we did not know each other prior to meeting at lunch, but he was such a smart person. He was an entrepreneur himself. So he was someone that when he spoke to you about business, he knew what he was talking about because he was building a business himself. And he had connections with different people in the entertainment industry, and he brought those celebrity investors into the brand. And then 3 years later, we were able to get equity partners with Pegasus Capital Advisors. So our board was made up of the people who were within the company, you know, parts of Pegasus, et cetera. And it was great to have that resource and to have that knowledge around the table, and really great to have an investor who was an entrepreneur, because it's very, very different. Yeah. When you understand what entrepreneurs go through, you understand how to talk to them.
Yeah. I know that in the VC world and in the entrepreneurial world, there's often that debate, is the best venture capital investor somebody who's been an entrepreneur before? Mm-hmm. And I know that people fall on both sides of that equation. You can be a good investor and know how to coach a CEO, and some people feel like you really have to have gone through the process before. So I don't know. Do you fall on one side of that versus the other?
I feel that with the case of my initial business partner, whose name is Steve Stout, with him. Him being an entrepreneur definitely played a huge role in that synergy that we felt from the first conversation that I don't think would have been in place if he was strictly a corporate guy. And I didn't know enough about business at that time to have bonded with a corporate person. But then going forward, you know, when we had Pegasus involved, Pegasus was not a company that had experience in the beauty space, which wasn't necessarily terrible. You know, it was an opportunity for both to learn, and they listened. What's bad is when someone doesn't have experience in the field and acts like they do. That's when it's a problem. But as long as everyone around the table recognizes, okay, we're not experts in this, and we're going to bring people in who are, and we're going to learn, and we're all learning together, then that can work, because then it becomes collaborative. But when you sort of sit back and act as if you know everything, that's when there's an issue.
Got it. That's it'll be a note for myself as well then. And, you know, one other thing in your talk you mentioned that also really resonated with me was how you utilized star power to promote your brand. And do you mind just talking a little bit about the impact of bringing in some big name celebrities and, you know, how and why you chose to go that route?
When we put the investment team together, it was Steve's idea to pull from people who were not only his friends, but also people with whom he was in business. And some of them also happened to be people who had purchased my product for years. So Will and Jada had been customers of Carol's Daughter from 1997. They didn't become investors until 2005. So there was that synergy of they use the products, they have respect for me and for what I'm doing, and they wanted to be part of helping my dreams come true. Then there was the synergy of we know Steve, we've been in business with him, he's a smart guy, this is probably something good for us to do. Then on the outward side to the public, we were able to use the names of people to get the brand talked about. Today, we're very fortunate that we get talked about because we make great products. But in the beginning, when you had to get the word out there and to get people to know who you were, you could have a story written about Jay-Z invests in a small brand in Brooklyn. And at least it gets people talking about, really? Oh, what's that brand? Oh, have you ever used it? Blah, blah, blah. So it was very beneficial. I don't know if it would have the exact same impact today, because today I think people in some ways feel much closer to celebrities because of social media. So they actually feel like they know them a little bit because they know what they had for breakfast. but back then they were a bit more distant, and we were also able to have a very good press event announcing our arrival to the beauty industry, because the editors were very excited to come to something where these people were going to be guests. So they may not have been excited to meet me at the time, but they were very excited to meet Will Smith.
Yeah.
And I just happened to be there.
No, I was thinking about that because I know I've read about how, you know, Carmelo Anthony has his own venture capital fund, and that's part of the strategy that they utilize too, is just being able to, you know, having a pull, having something that gets... Mm-hmm. That gets you know, an investor, a customer, or somebody into the room.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we have time for one final question, and you know, I wanted to ask you for today's batch of entrepreneurs or for students who are graduating with business degrees or with environmental degrees, what opportunities exist in the hair care or beauty product space for people who are looking to come in and make a difference?
I believe that there is definitely white space in the tools aspect of things. There are a number of tools out there, but I always hear hairstylists talk about, oh, I wish I could have a flat iron that did this or a curling iron that did that. And then when it comes to the flexibility of people wanting to wear their hair straight, if it were possible, I don't know that it is because it hasn't been done yet, but if it were possible for someone to create something that straightened the hair without permanently breaking the bonds of the hair, I think women would be all over it. They don't want to permanently alter their hair, but if they could temporarily and safely do it, they'd be very happy. I just don't know if that's possible.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with me. Once again, this is the Bright Lights, Green Sights series, and my name is Samith Kadakia. Thank you.